Welcome back to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. On today's show, we honor a friend of the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast, Greg, who's been with us basically not from the beginning, but almost from the beginning, and that's Ellis Yan and Technical Consumer Products, TCPI.com.
Strong nailed member, so strong that I have to double up my hat for him. But they have been in business a long time, one of the initiators of the compact fluorescent. Then they are the, I guess, initiators, is that the right word, or inventors, whatever it is, kind of the initial company that brought that out. Yep. And then they came out with LED and really expanded on that. And to this day, now have one of the broadest offerings of LED and any lighting. And that's what I love about TCP. And I've always loved is that I know I can sell the concept to someone of a light bulb and then, or whatever it might be, a fixture. And then I know that whatever they want, they can get from TCP. It doesn't matter the color, they're going to get it. TCP is an actual lighting manufacturer. We've been to their factory. They make their product. They're legit. Great company.
And you know, the president or CEO of TCP, I'm not sure what his title actually is, whether it's president or CEO, Ellis Yan is a great friend of ours. And we always call them the king. And when he came back and into the lighting industry, it was the return of the king of lighting. And so in this episode, we're going to, he's been on the show so many times, Greg, we're just going to run some of the highlights of Ellis Yan on the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. And of course, nailed.org. But here, get ready for Ellis Yan, the king of lighting.
Let's get into lighting. So how did you started TCP and how did you get into that?
Okay, way back, I was looking for opportunities. I thought the lighting could be one of them. And I hooked up with somebody from GE Lighting. They come from GE Lighting, start another company in Cleveland. Let me put it this way. Cleveland has had and has lots of opportunity here in terms of lighting because of GE Lighting. So there's a lot of talents in Cleveland. There's a lot of opportunity because of that. And I was very fortunate, able to connect with some of those people. And then I thought, that's really cool. Lighting could be something very unique. That's why we started TCP at 1993. So TCP was established at that time. So from 1993 to today is
1993 till today. So you've had some serious growth from that, from 93 to today. Tell me how your connections in mainland China, along with, because I have a feeling that your connections to mainland China and your connections in Cleveland were sort of the stars crossing and smashing into each other that made TCP a great company. Can you share more about that?
Yes. As you understand, I come to this country, and obviously after you mentioned Deng Xiaoping, China opened up. So actually, thanks to my parents were heavily engaged with the trading. So both of them in the Chinese-sponsored trading companies, which opened up a lot of opportunities for me. So at that time, it was very, very new for trading. We able to identify the opportunities related to the light bulb side or lighting side. It was brand new at that time. So I was kind of ahead of everybody else, able to identify the resources, what we're capable to do in China, what kind of things could be very useful for us to bring to the United States, how we establish the trade between the two countries through the light bulbs. I was a week ahead of that. But more than that, the opportunity comes in, it came in when the CFL, if you remember, compact fluorescent lamps, become popular in the middle of the 90s. At that time, we find one light bulb for spiral light bulbs. If you see way back, even a couple years ago, at all the retail store, fluorescent come out of spiral. The first spiral lamps I saw was in the 1995-96. It was the first one I saw. I thought that was a wonderful opportunity because it's just cute and very comfortable, very cute. Like people call this is ice cream cone, you know?
Sure.
That's how they're being made. However, it took me 2 years. It took me 2 years to find out where the light bulbs was being manufactured at the beginning. 2 years. at that time was very secretive, the bulbs being made. So after I identified that, I basically put all the technology, the houses being made, and I kind of put together a group of people, start from bending glass, because all the spiral version has glass. Leslie, there is one in the showroom you can get. I can show you guys. And how to bend in the glass, how we make the products being commercial version. It took us another couple of years for that. So in the 1997 and 8, we brought that spiral lamps into United States. We started commercialize this concept. From that point on, it never stopped.
You know, the fact that Alessian survived the Cultural Revolution in China is, and was shipped to a small village and became a hog farmer and learned how to cook rice from on top of a fire. And that story is really, really incredible. And, you know, you often read about the Cultural Revolution in China from books and all that, but to hear someone's firsthand account of being taken from their parents and put on the bus and sent to the mountains, I think it was for a decade or something like that, some period of time, and then returns and gets an education in that small village, and his mother sends him the books and all that. It's just incredible. What an incredible story.
First couple of weeks, you know, I mean, we're kids. Like, just imagine, we're kids, right? Just like today's kids, okay? You go camping. How about that? You go camping, okay? Obviously, camping with no equipment at all. And the local people are so nice to us. So they give us food, okay? And that's for first couple weeks. And, you know, because of camping, yes, the living is terrible, but it's kind of fun, right? Sort of, okay.
Deal.
And then after that, we brought a bunch of dry food or canned food with us. We start open up all the cans because, God, I was only 15. I even didn't know how to cook rice, okay?
Oh, man.
And then slowly, the canned food started going away, like every day. Then we have 10 kids together, so we had our little meetings. We say, you know what? We better learn how to do things here because it looks like we're not going home. At that time, after one day and a 5 hours journey, home seems so, so far away. Mm-hmm. And we couldn't go home anymore. So we stuck here. That's, I would say, about a month and a half later. And all of a sudden, we realized it. We said, holy moly, we stuck here. And we were depressed. And we didn't smile. And we say to ourselves, what are we going to do? I think so-called depressing area like lasts for at least like a few weeks. Mm-hmm. So the end of that period, all together, we said, you know, let's just figure out how to live here. That's we start learn how to do everything from beginning to the end. We ate a half cooked rice for at least a couple months because we didn't know how to cook it. It's awful, guys. Half cooked rice. It was like, holy moly, okay? And the difficult part is this. Because I don't know if you guys ever saw, because today we have the rice cook, right? So now imagine you didn't have the electricity. So literally each family over there, obviously the farmers, local farmers give us called the stove. The stove is a big pot metal walker, but they have stones built around it. So put this walker in the middle. Then underneath, you're using wood or straw.
Yeah.
Now, in order to cook anything or cook rice, you got to capable to control the frame underneath it. Mm-hmm. So your rice even half cooked or burnt. Because you didn't know how quickly to put a flame away. So next you know is everybody eating burnt black rice. That's our lesson number one. We really learned that. Oh God, it's just like every day we say, how come they can't have a good rice? We couldn't cook a rice. Are we stupid or not?
Yeah.
So in the 1976, okay, at that time, that's another benchmark of the time, which the Cultural Revolution was over. Mm-hmm. Okay, announced. And Deng Xiaoping is the name everybody heard. Become the leader. Mm-hmm. So the first thing he did, he said, got to put all the education systems back. Now, the difficult part was where everything was being destroyed, how do you put everything back? Mm-hmm. So the first thing he did was, he said, you know what? We have to put this qualification or the entering testing system into the place. So obviously, very simple for them to open up the, make sure the junior high school, senior high school back to the business. But the university was pretty much shut down. Hmm. Okay. So he wanted to open up a university again, but he wanted to set up the entering testing just and that. So the way he did was, he said, you know what? I don't care how old you are. You could be 20. You could be 40. If you're able to pass the test, I will let you go back to the university or colleges.
Hmm.
Because there's no other way to handle this. Okay. So that was being announced in the end of 1975, 76. Mm-hmm. 75, I don't remember exactly what the time was. So my mother sent me 3 boxes of the textbooks, all kind of stuff in it, you name it, from physics to math to everything. And he sent me a very serious letter. He said, son, this could be an opportunity to get out there because there's no other way you can get out of there. Give a shot. So I got all those books. I studied. Tell the truth, I even didn't know how I studied. I even didn't know if I got it, I learned, I didn't learn. Because that's all I had.
Yeah.
Whoa.
That was bizarre. And every day I was disciplined enough. In every evening, I spent 3-4 hours after the farm work, just look at those books. Sometimes I stared at 1 page for all night long because I had no idea what this page was talking about.
Mm.
But I guess I learned something. I guess, okay.
Did you pass the test?
I passed the test. Actually, I don't know how I did it. Later on, about a couple years ago, finally I saw the statistics, okay? There was many people applied. Only 5% passed. Wow. Now, remember, I had to compete against 6-7 years older than me. And those guys literally went formal education from junior high to the senior high. You know what I mean? Because I'm talking about the age gap.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So I even didn't realize. When I say this, you will pass. Mm-hmm. 1973, after Nixon went there in 1992, my aunt on my mom's side, because in 1949, my mom has altogether they had 6 siblings. Okay, 3 of them come to the U.S. in 1949, 1952. At that time, before the communists took over, so 2 of my aunts and 1 of my uncle were in the U.S. since then. After Nixon, we went there in 1972. The door opened a little bit. So my grandfather was in Shanghai. So my aunt from Cleveland, with her 2 kids, went to China to visit my
my grandfather, and obviously my mom and everybody over there. Okay. So when they arrive over there, okay, obviously the family all got together. They haven't seen each other or they haven't talked to each other almost since 1949, 50, 51. So everybody introduced their family. Okay. So my mom told my aunt, so, you know, I had, I have four kids. So my aunt said, only three here. Where's the fourth one? That was me. Oh, mom said the fourth one in the farm. So my aunt couldn't understand. Come from U.S. Can you imagine, right? It was still during the Cultural Revolution. Anybody come from U.S. say, why the kid supposed to be in the school end up in the farm? Mm-hmm. Okay. And she said, can he come? So my mom sent me a telegram. Okay. And say, your aunt and your cousins, everybody were here. We had a family reunion. If you can get a permission to come, obviously I applied. I went to the local, authority government. It's still, there's a government over there. Sure. And I got my, permission to come back. However, it took me 3 days. Remember, now I have to get on a bus, I have a train, blah, 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 blah. Okay, let me, long story short, on the third day, they were leaving Shanghai. And my aunt told my mom, say, you know, this is not right. Okay? And she said, if there's any opportunity, I can help him. If it's possible to come to US. Okay? She said, I can arrange for study for him. But that was 1973. At that time, that kind of comments, that kind of things was unheard of because mm-hmm. country was still closed. Okay? And very unfortunately, that following day when I arrived in Shanghai, they already left. Mm-hmm. So at that time, we never met. Okay. So they come back to the States. My aunt literally helped me to make arrangement for the language school at that time, okay? See if it's possible. But even that was being made, the arrangement was being made, China was not open. So I took her arrangement, went to the local authority, everybody looked at me thinking, you won't be... You must be out of your mind. That's like a no-no.
Did you ask them to go to America?
Right. You could end up in jail just for asking. Hmm. And obviously, I was young and stupid.
How old?
Okay. Oh, at that time was, let me think, 77. I was like 18. 17, 18. Okay. So I thought, hey, you know, I was in a farm. It cannot be worse than that. Jail, maybe. So I'm already at the bottom of the bottom. So what was the big deal, right? But I got a little bit excited. I even didn't know what that meant to me. I got excited. But, you know, things just went on. I went back to the farm. Every morning, I got up, go to the rice paddy, you know, rice paddy work. And all of a sudden, these things just kind of came and went. Like nothing happened. Okay. Then, a few years later, then we talk about this school. 1976, Cultural Revolution was over. After 10 years. And Deng Xiaoping come back. And the first thing he did was got to put a school system back again, got to open up a university. Because of that, all of a sudden, it come out the way is, it's really, there's no way to fix it. So the only way they could do is, okay, there is an entry test for the university. Anybody can pass it, go back to school. That's why I was talking about last night. Then my mom sending me those boxes.
So you're back to your self-study and you're taking this test. Yes. So
yes.
What happens?
Actually, you know, I was pretty good with history. I was good at English because of my mom. Because when I was in Shanghai, when I was little, remember the junior high I went was a Christian school. So my mom, my aunt, went that school too. So before that, actually, my mom, my father, they all speak English. Sometimes, if they didn't want us to know certain things, all of a sudden they switched to English because they didn't want us to know. Okay. We always wondering what they were talking about. Okay. Mm. Because that's the education background. Obviously, we learned something about that. And I was pretty good in Chinese and history, this and that. My math was half decent, but be very honest with you, I was not good at physics and things like that. Okay. So I was lucky enough focus on certain things because I realized I was really bad at certain things. I focused on those things. I was really good at it. Mm-hmm. I guess whatever I studied, I put my mind to it and I passed tests. It was shocking to me. I even didn't know. Okay. And because after it was done, just like everything else, I said, hey, I give a try. It's okay. So the day I took the test, I come back to my village. And like everybody else, next morning, the sun come out. I got up, went to work in the rice paddy. Hmm. About a month later, out of the blue, I even didn't put any hope on it. All of a sudden, there is letter, just like things like that. Come to down to the local and deliver to me. Say, oh, by the way, you've been accepted to a local college.
Hmm.
And I couldn't believe it. I look at this whole thing. I said, whoa. Like you guys said, a day ago, I thought there was no future. Sure. And all of a sudden, I have this letter in front of me. Okay. So, sure. Whoa. Does that mean I'm getting out of here?
So how did you get your first trip over to America? How did that happen? You went to college. What were you studying in college?
Okay,
and then how did it translate into America?
Then I went to college for a couple, about a year and a half. Okay. Because, college started on the 1960, 1977. Okay. Now this is another bizarre story because I went to college for 2.5 years. I didn't realize four or five years ago, after I submitted this asking for silly things come to the United States, it was on the record. It was on the record, but I didn't know about this. So that was also after April. Somehow this April has something to do with me. It was in April, one of the afternoons. The school principal come to me and he said to me, Alice, we don't know what happened, but the security bureau wants you to stop by 9 o'clock in the office. And I said to myself, holy, what did I do? I didn't do anything. I didn't say anything.
No, is the security, is that the college security or is that a part of the Communist
no.
Party?
Communist Party Security Bureau. Mm-hmm. That's the things.
Yep.
You don't want to get a new tool. Okay. I didn't do anything wrong. I was a good farming boy, you know. Mm-hmm. So the next morning, I was scared because it didn't. I tell the truth, I forgot everything. I forgot the documents I submitted. I forgot all those things. You know what I mean? I went through the farming, then they sent that, you know, and then I was in the school. Okay. So the next morning I went. And it was so bizarre. And the lady received me, and she said, do you have a 5 yuan with you? I said, does these days you have to pay to go to jail? Why did they ask you for 5 yuan? Like, whoa, this is something new to me. I said, no, I don't. He said, are you able to get it? I said, yes. Then she said, why don't you come back tomorrow morning again at 9 o'clock? You need to bring in 5 yuan with the two pictures. Okay. Oh, I said, it was, you know, I was a fine member. I said, okay, would you tell me where can I get those pictures? Oh, then she wrote on the address, said, go here in the back. There is a shop. Go over there to get it. So I went there. I got it. I went back to the school. I you know, I have little money my mom, my dad gave to me just for emergency type of stuff. Now, something kind of disgusting, but usually, because money is so little, so precious. Okay. Mm-hmm. I didn't have any place to put it, but I actually hide my money in my shoes.
That was your wallet, your shoe wallet.
Yeah. Love it. Greg, you're absolutely right. My shoes and my wallet. Okay.
So, but hang on a second here. If money is so rare, that means
not rich, just not a lot.
Okay. Yeah. Right. So, but that means that people aren't going and buying lunch anywhere. They're being served food in the institution they're attending.
Correct.
Like wherever they go in these communist states, these primitive communist states, the food and the well-being and everything has to go with the institution.
Correct. In the meantime, it does exchange in money, but in such a small amount.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. For instance, by today's standard, today at that time, the Chinese 10 cents is a lunch equivalent to, let's 2 cents today. Mm-hmm. So you know what I mean? So sure. Korea is people, normal people have their job at that time. They may only have a $10 a month,
mm-hmm.
US. You see what I mean? That's what I'm saying. Sure. It's not a lot.
Mm-hmm. But they would eat at the factory they worked at, or they would eat at the
school. Everybody eat in cafeteria. Everybody ate in cafeteria. It doesn't matter school or factory. Okay, obviously in the village that's a different story.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you go to school, it means that you have a room where you sleep at the school as well.
Yes. Yeah, it's a dorm, so we have like six kids were in the one room,
mm-hmm.
okay? And you eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner in the cafeteria.
So
I went back.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I went back. I went through my wallet, okay? Mm-hmm. Actually, you know what? That was the only five I had. I had a six because I had to pay that pictures. So the next day I went to the shop first, got my picture, I went back. Okay. So exactly the same thing. So quick was I give the lady 5 yuan, then I give the lady 2 pictures. So I ask the lady something weird. I say, okay, so where do I go now? I'm really thinking she's going to send me to jail. I say, where do I go now? And she said to me, you go back to your school, come back here in 1 week. I said, gee, I never heard anything like that. I was totally confused, sure. Guys. Totally, totally confused. But at this point, you could just guess. Actually, they tried to give me a passport.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But I didn't know about that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So later, what I found out was in the 80s, early 80s, country opened up. So when the country opened up, they went through the old file to look at how many people asked for in the past, or are they decent kids? I'm just using that word, decent, okay? Mm-hmm. Not troublemaker, right? They are, you know, they are okay. So they literally pulled up those small group of people out and let them out. So I was lucky, was one of those.
And what year was that?
I think in the 78.
1978.
Later 78, early 79. At that time, I was so lucky. I found out later. At that time, you know what I mean? When internally they decide they want to open up a little bit, which means they were allowed certain people to leave China. They just went through the old files to decide who's who. Okay. Mm. So whatever they decide, I was one of them.
So that lady gave you your passport a week later?
A week later, the lady gave me the passport and the lady told me, say, okay, you have to deal this by yourself. Number one, go back to your school. Okay. Tell your school authority you are leaving the school. Okay. Then you now you are your own. You have the passport. You have to go to Beijing, the U.S. embassy, to get a visa.
Very similar to what Michael had said here. I think that backstory is unbelievable. It's something that I can't even relate to. When you hear how he grew up and how long he was there and the kind of conditions he lived in and to what he's become today, and to be able to overcome that and have the attitude that he has and the passion for life, really. You know, I mean, maybe that helped him appreciate it more, but unbelievable that he went through all of that. And you can see it today in the type of person he is, that he's overcome a lot and very impressed by his life.
That's correct. Because one thing I always tell people is we as a human, we have such a flexibility. And sometimes we do not realize it in a difficult time or difficult environment, how much we're able to stretch out, you know, ourselves out, how much you're able to take. Like you said, okay, things like that, not just build up the character, you also give yourself a confidence. In other words, I always tell people, doesn't matter how difficult it is, go outside, look at the sky, and tell yourself, sky's not falling.
Hmm.
So what's the big deal? Tomorrow will be a better day. It doesn't matter how difficult it is. It doesn't matter how many times we eat burnt rice or the rice patties. So horrible. It's okay. The sun has to go down.
Mm-hmm.
And the sun will come up and it will go down again. So I always joke about this, my travel with the people. People say, oh my goodness, you travel overseas so often, so difficult, how many hours? And I'm using same kind of thought. I tell people, I say, you know what? Airplane takes off, it has to come down. Doesn't matter how long it is, it will come down. So relax. So you're right. My experience really that time for 7-8 years make me, it's kind of very strong internally. Obviously, you know, I do build my body a little bit, lots of muscles at that time. And believe it or not, after that, I kept doing exercise. But more than that is a mindset. It's make my will become very, very determined. When I try to get something done, I pretty much tell myself, you know what? I will never give up. I may not be smart as other people. I may not be lucky as other people. But you know what? If I just hang in there, that's what I learned in the farm. As long as I hang in there, don't give up. Okay? And someday, somehow, at the end of the line, only a few people left. And I will be those one of the lucky ones. Not because I'm smart, not because I'm lucky, just I never give up.
Okay.
Unknown really didn't scare me because I went through 7 years. The farms unknown really taught me a huge thing. Don't worry about unknown. Okay? Go out to face whatever it is. Do whatever you have to do. You will survive.
Hmm.
Okay. But you know what? Later I find out, come to States, a little bit more difficult than when I went to the farm. Because a little bit difficult. Okay. But that was the mindset. The comparison is when I went to the farm, it's just very difficult physical work. Okay. Mm-hmm. When I come to the United States, it become my head change. Okay. Whatever's in my head start changing, not my body. The head start changing. The head they have to adjust it. Okay. Because truly, no comparison, no imagination, never ever thought that something ever existed like that outside of China. I don't know how to describe this. It's just unknown. It's just imagine you end up a place which you are going to walk into is complete unknown. Okay. You even didn't know how to deal with it. You even don't know how to behave. Nothing. Zip.
Sounds like the farm all over again.
Yes, but in a different way.
I feel like he, you know, one of the problems, I feel like he, we got to make it seem like he's still alive, right? So don't put this up there like he's not dead, right? So how do I say it? I have great admiration for Ellis Yahn, for his life, for his excitement in lighting, for the innovations he's come up with. And then from the transitions, not a lot of people can reinvent themselves so many times. And, you know, from CFLs through the T8 retrofit days, I remember these TCP kits would come with the sockets installed on them and all these kinds of things back in the old T8, T12 to T8 days. And so this is a guy that has invented himself over and over and over in his career. And my hat's off to Ellis Yahn and the great company he's built, and we wish him all the best.
Where are you in 1979 when they meet at the White House with Richard Nixon and Jimmy Carter and all that? Are you in America yet?
Yes, I don't remember exactly which day, but I was here 1979, September 17th. That's when I arrived here. I think it happened, I don't remember, is it before or after that? But to answer your question, it's you're absolutely correct. It's a fascinating. The reason for that is, since 1949 all the way to 1979 or 1976 or 1976 or 1977 range, the entire country in China, what people were considered at that time, economy was not a topic or issue or anything on the agenda. The people living standard is not on agenda. The entire society is under what we call political class, one class against the other, which means working class against non-working class. That has been going on for the daily and monthly and yearly. That being said, when the Deng Xiaoping come back and look at this whole thing, say, you know what? We need to change this, okay? Because obviously it didn't work. Because people were not having good life. Some people were still starving, not enough food. So that being said, when he come back, so we have to change all those. But just imagine, since 1949 up to 1976, 1970s, the whole country never talking about economy, only talking about how politically they fight against each other. So they didn't know what to do. Get rich or glorier, if for anybody except the Deng Xiaoping, anybody make that comment at that time will end up in jail.
Come on, Zhou Enlai could have said it.
Right? I mean,
Zhou Enlai? Z-H-O-U-N-Lai.
Zhou Enlai, right.
He could have said it too. He could have said it too.
He was a prime minister. I mean, only people at that level, topest level. Otherwise, if I say something like that at that time, oh my God, I'm pretty sure I'm end up in jail. That's number one. Number two, when that concept come out, they didn't know what to do. Because by propaganda, they have to tell people, okay, what that means. So when Deng Xiaoping come out say, get rich is glorious, everybody can't stand. So what are we supposed to do? They got to have some kind of supporting theory. I watched a Chinese soap opera, you can call it a miniseries, about Deng Xiaoping. When the concept come out, there's a large group of people literally dig into all the theorist articles, try to come out of some kind of foundation to tell people this is the right things to do. This is still under the guidance of the communist theory, because it was shocking to everybody. Said, "Whoa!" That's why people didn't realize it was extremely difficult. If without people like Deng Xiaoping have that kind of vision or that kind of power, the power have the vision have to come together. If you have the vision, you have no power, you end up in jail. If you have the vision plus the power, say, that's the way it is. Do it.
That's how you start TCP.
Correct.
You have the vision.
I know.
And the power. Okay, so you're in America in 1979. and you start correct. Seeing this, and you're still in touch correct. With your family.
Yes.
At what point did you decide that it was time to start engaging? Because what they were talking about with Jimmy Carter, and they even brought back Nixon in 1979. He even came to the meeting. Nixon came to the meeting with Deng Xiaoping and Jimmy Carter to normalize the relations between China and America. So that happens. I would say that TCP is a beneficiary of those meetings. I would say that TCP is a child of the normalization of relations between America and China, is it not?
Correct. You're absolutely correct. Since 1979, let's say using 1979, even the Jimmy Carter, everything, everybody was talking about that, normalized the relationship. However, it took a long time to change inside China. Like I mentioned that early, people didn't know what to do. So that took about 5 years. Mm. For the entire China, people realize, oh, I'm able to form my own company, or I'm able to make money, not end up in jail. Just get that concept took like 5 years. Because before that, let's face it, nobody wants to end up in jail, right? Any that kind of concept end up in jail. So I would say really for common people start to loosen up, that was like 83, 84 or 85 at that time. So you are absolutely correct. I was the lucky one because I was in the States. I graduated from college. I had enough understanding about American culture and American so-called how people behave here. My aunt was a tremendous amount of teacher. I tried to educate me, start from how to eat food, how to using forks. You know, people think, oh, what's a big deal? It is a big deal because if you go out with people, you mingle with people, if people think you are weird, you know, then, you know, people don't talk to you. That's what I'm saying. I had a tremendous amount of opportunity over there. That's the beginning. Then you see that China slowly open up. Then I was being approached by people here say, hey, Americans, hey, can we do something over there? Is there any way you can help us kind of establish that kind of relationship? So I really took advantage of that. That's how so-called the business started. TCP started in 1993, but actually our business started in 1985, 86. At that time, I'm kind of moving gutsy moves because in the 1995, 1996, Chinese government start just open up this concept to bring the overseas business into China. So it was a form, so-called a joint venture. It was a brand new concept at that time. Okay, people say, what's a joint venture? Joint venture is if you give us the opportunity through what kind of investment, this and that, and able to, we allow you to form a company here. So in 1987, we formed, I was very weird at that time in Shanghai, was the very first one of the joint venture. It's a 50-50 split, not like today. At that time, the government must own 50%. You have no choice. Otherwise, don't do it. Not like today, you can own 100%, 50-50. So we put together 50-50. We only had 11 employees.
So and, TCP was like a state-owned enterprise.
No, 50% in China, not in U.S. Remember,
no.
What was it called?
No, but in China, like the, you always hear in the news about these state-owned enterprises in China. You know that was TCP.
Oh yeah, at that time, the TCP, so-called a China operation, that joint venture. Mm-hmm. TCP only owned 50% of that. The other 50% owned by the government.
Wow.
Okay, like, just like everybody else out there.
And what was it called in 1986? Was it TCP from there?
No. Okay. We're not called TCP. Actually, we want like, to make sure we like to understand that this is the business, doing business in China. It's called China Economic Exchange.
And now, how did you have a connection in China to make the MR-16? Was it somebody you grew up with, or how did you, because you lived in America now for 7-8 years at this point? How did you go back to that?
Oh, none of above. That's what I say. Life is so strange. So after those friends helped me,
okay? And basically then my brother, Solomon, at that time was in another city. So we had a family meeting and we said, what are we going to do? My dad was also, you know, as entrepreneur, he said, and my mom said the same thing. Hey, kids, looks like this is an opportunity. Why don't you two brothers together? Let's give a shot, see what happened. So that was a gutsy move from Solomon's side. He quit his job, literally quit. At that time, it's unheard of quitting your jobs. He quit his jobs, moved back to Shanghai. And in the meantime, through a friend of ours in a Shanghai suburb, that's the current TCP location right now, there is a little manufacturing, like a mom's pop shop, were doing extremely bad. So with the local government connection, they agreed to give us the buildings, the this and that, everything we need, set up a small operation. Okay? So then we went through those 50-50. After 50-50, and then the U.S. friend helped me out to send all the equipment over there. Not just that, they also sent the technicians over to China to teach our people, had no experience, nothing, zip, how to put an MR16 together.
Like you were sitting right in the right place at the right time. Like you had the thing set together. I'm talking like politics, economics, energy, focus on energy reduction, everything. Like you saw the seam open and you blasted right through the seam with your brother.
Correct. Let me tell you this. After my old friend, the big Buddha fading away, we perfected things, everything together. And then one of the trip I remember, my brother Solomon say, Ellis, so what do you want to do? I said, make a big move. I said, what do you mean? I said, get a much bigger piece of land. I'm not kidding here. So we got a piece of land. And we were standing there. And he looked at me. He said, are you serious about this? I said, yes. He said, what do you want me to do? I said, build as many buildings on that land as possible. He said, but you don't have the business right now. This is a true story. I don't know what I was thinking. I just looked at him. I was a little bit upset. I said, Solomon, just do it. Just do it. That was it. And I was always appreciated. You know what I mean? Even he's my brother. I bet you at that time he thinks, Alice, you must be out of your mind. What if we pay the money for the land, we put the buildings up, then you won't have the business. Then what? So I would say, you are right, but you know what? I think I'm so blessed. I'm so lucky. What if it didn't go that direction, right? What if?
You there's a sense in which one carves their own destiny out, and there's a sense in which the destiny carves you. I mean,
correct.
You can look at it both ways. You know, you probably should look at it both ways, actually, is probably the healthiest way to do it.
Ellis Yan adds so much flavor to the lighting industry. I mean, he's just one of those people that's at every event. He's there and he's talking to the customers and he's excited about lighting. You know, there's been times where everyone was down and things look rough and the outlook is bleak. And there's Ellis as excited as ever up on a ladder. He's talking about the latest fixture that he's making in his factory and what he can bring over. And I remember one time I said, you know what we need is this type of bulb. 2 weeks later, he emailed me and he had it. And so, you know, without Ellis's passion and desire to please the customer, the lighting industry would be at a huge loss. We'd lose probably our best personality, I think. When all your sales are gone, when everything's bleak, right? All that stuff is out there. That's bad. You can't act like a loser.
No.
You got to put a tie on.
Correct.
You got to strike out again. Right.
And you go the other way.
Yes.
Where everybody's so depressed. Everybody thinks it's the end of the world.
Yeah.
You will lead.
Exactly.
You will lead those depressing people.
Yes.
And take them out of this setting and yes. tell them it's a glorious future and a friend of you.
Yes.
But how do you make that happen?
You put a tie on.
No. You light up the lights. Turn the lights on.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
That when the lights is on,
and narrows them. They feel good about themselves. All the headaches will go away.
Yes.
Right? You energize.
Yes.
You will jump out your chair.
Yes.
You say, you know what? Let's go for it.
Let's go.
That's how we do.
Ellis is a character, and I say that in a good way. I mean, he's someone that you can actually look at and say, every time I see him, I smile. Let's put it that way. I'm just like, I know he's going to come up with something cool, something unique that no one else has done. You know, it started with him eating mercury, actually taking a little tablet and eating it and showing it on camera and saying it's not that bad, you know, with the compact fluorescence and kind of calming people's fear over the mercury that was in it. So he did that, and he did that more than once, you know, and that started it off. And now to what he's doing today, I've even seen some TikToks and things that he's doing with LED and things like that. But fun, always a smile, always have fun. So Ellis is a character in a good way. Lighting.
Nobody's going back to candles, Jan. Ellis, no one's going back to candles, Ellis, Jan.
No,
nobody.
Nobody.
Okay. That's right.
We are ready. That's why Gung Ho moving forward. We are actually speed up. We get the light bulb ready. We get a fixture ready. We just tell people we are here to serve you.
Woo!
So that's awesome. Never, TCP will guarantee everybody out there, you will never have the darkness because we have the lights and we love the lights.
Oh, yeah. I love it. I love it.
Woo! It's passionate. Bringing that passion again that we need right now more than ever. We appreciate that, Ellis. That's awesome.
And you know, it's not that we're excited. That's not the right word. We're passionate. We're prepared. We're ready, Ellis.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
You know, we're in a business here. I have a lighting company, and I have to have my business hat on all the time. But sometimes business and friendship can meld together. And I truly feel that's happened with Ellis over the years. You know, he knows we buy from other people, and he works with our competitors, and all that works out. But as a person, I love him. He's so entertaining, so fun to be with. So smart too. I mean, like the ideas he comes up with and things he thinks about are always forward thinking and always makes you think about your business and making it better. And at the same time, just a great guy and a friend. So what more can you ask for out of a business relationship than a friend and someone that you can enhance your business with?
Now, Mike, I'm going to challenge you a little on what you said, that we need a new story. I think we do to some degree, but I like this as a nice in-between, because you can still go LED to LED with a lumens per watt increase and quality. So, you know, a lot of us, like people that have been selling on energy for years, you get scared of that idea of like, okay, what's going to happen when I don't have a payback story? But this is like, okay, we got a payback and we got a quality story. So we got two things, not as good a payback as what we've seen, you know, going fluorescent to LED, but still, to me, that's a little exciting, because if that keeps going up, we can have some business on our own.
I'm way more excited about the applications that are opening up to do things with light bulbs again. Like, you know, to solve people's problems by selling them a light bulb. And, you know, you could do that with halogen. With LED, it was always an energy story. And not everything's a bean counting situation. You know, some applications, it doesn't matter how much money the lighting costs. It matters if the effect is right.
I agree, both of you. Yes, Mike, I agree. It's a solve people's issue for the lighting side. Yes. We're talking about latest technology, colors, this and that. But on the other hand, why I'm mentioning efficacy issue, because, again, it's a business opportunity with the utility company. Let's face it, okay? Now, the DLC standard is 110. If I can do 190, I can go back to the utility company again and say, guess what? Okay, if you have more funding for me, I can literally retrofit it, which you just did 3 years ago, because now I give you more saving. It's just simple saving, business opportunity, nothing more, nothing less. Okay, but if you want to get people excited, then go back to Mike's. We're offering people very unique, solve people's problem. Remember, all used to be ugly colors. Now we can reverse the fixture into a beautiful one, or by you have a wrong color in the fixture, God, that fixture will look ugly. As simple as that.
It's really about bringing it all together so that you can kind of go both ways, where you have this great energy ROI story, plus you have great quality of light. Kind of, you don't have to sacrifice a energy savings payback for your quality of light anymore. You can do whatever you want, and we can help you with that.
Yeah. So even every day people talking about, oh, LED this, LED that, people never look at the detail. The detail of the market is just simply huge. So in my opinion today, who able to come out with the best LED light bulb? Who's going to win the battle?
So you still think the battle is still continuing? Or do you think we're...
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. The battle is continuing. As the battle still depend on who come out the best light bulb. I'm not kidding here. It's how we, day in, day out, we fight for. Who come out the best light bulb?
You got to love Ellis Young, Craig Garrick.
Craziest people in lighting. He's the person. He's the one who started it, and you do have to love him. You see these highlights today, and it's unbelievable the experience he has and the knowledge he has in lighting and the passion.
Yes.
And that's what I love more than anything.
And not only that, though, but maybe the most interesting life of anyone maybe I've ever met, to be honest with you. So we honor TCP, go to TCPI.com. That's right, TCPI.com, the craziest people in lighting. And also for our friend Ellis Young, the king of lighting. And of course, longtime member of the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors, go to NAILD.org. Double-hatted Greg Herrick over there. And of course, thanks to all you nailed members and non-nailed members. We love you guys. Thanks for listening.